Everything we believe hinges on the resurrection. This is the day, this resurrection Sunday. This is the day that the Lord has made, and this is the day that we really do rejoice in, because everything changes because of this day. If it weren't for the events that we celebrate on this day, if it weren't for Easter, if it weren't for the resurrection, we wouldn't celebrate Christmas. I saw on Facebook, somebody said this weekend, I wish we paid the same amount of emphasis to Easter that we do to Christmas in the world. And I said, you know, you're right, because if it weren't for this day, we wouldn't even celebrate Christmas. It would just be another blip on the calendar. But this is the day that the Lord has made, and we rejoice and we are glad in it. Last week, we talked about the weeks leading up to the crucifixion. Jesus rides into town on that donkey, and he is celebrated with the shouts of Hosanna, which means God, and save us, Lord. The people worshiped him. And how quickly things began to unravel, and by the end of the week, he was hanging on a cross. We stopped short of the events of that Friday, but just to remind you, it was about 8 o'clock that morning that Pilate sentenced him to death. By 9 o'clock, from all the accounts, Jesus was nailed to that cross. From noon until 3, darkness covered the whole land. And about 3 that afternoon, Jesus died. That's when he said, "Into your soul I commit my spirit." When he said, "It is finished." And when he said, "It is finished," it was not that it means he is finished, but he is finished doing the work that he had intended to accomplish. By 6 o'clock that evening, they had laid him in the tomb, because sunset was coming on Friday afternoon, Friday evening, and at the sunset on Friday evening, it would be the beginning of Sabbath. Sabbath was their time of rest, so they had to quickly prepare Jesus' body and lay it in the tomb. We know that Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus took his body. They wrapped it in cloths. They wrapped it with all the spices that they could as quickly as they could and laid him in that new tomb that had never been used before. And the Sabbath began. What do they do on Sabbath? Nothing. You don't do anything on the Sabbath. You're supposed to rest and reflect. Can you imagine, as Charlie said, what was going through the disciples' minds at this time? The week has just been a blur for them. Now, I don't know what your Saturday was like, but ours was busy. We had things going on. There was a hot dog cookout. There was a bounce castle. There was an Easter egg hunt and a three-year-old in the mix. Try being still with a three-year-old in the house. It ain't going to happen. We were busy yesterday, and we had a wedding last night, and it's just, you know, it's like, oh, man, when you finally lay your head on the pillow, it was a busy day. The people, the disciples, the apostles, everybody that had been following Jesus did not have the luxury of getting lost in all the events of the day. They had to sit still, sit quietly in their emotions. And I can only imagine as they reflected on the fact that one of the 12 that had been with them for the last 3 years has now betrayed Jesus. It's clear to them what has happened, and he has gone out and killed himself. The one that they had been following and learning from for the past 3 years, Jesus, the one they had seen do miraculous things and heal people, raise people from the dead, feed thousands of people with just a little bit of food, the one they thought was going to take over and rule Jerusalem and kick the Roman rule out, was now crucified as a criminal on a Roman cross. It wasn't supposed to be this way. And now they saw his body taken down with the blood and water coming out of the side. They know he was dead. They saw him laid in a tomb. And then they all just kind of go to their homes in shock. They had to be still and try to sort things out. They're beginning to wonder, what has happened? The words of Jesus that they have heard for the past 3 years are ringing in their ears, and it still doesn't fit. It doesn't make sense for what they expected. They're still trying to wrap their minds around it. And then the events of Sunday morning that we have recorded in all the Gospels, and I chose to use John's Gospel to talk about the events of that resurrection morning. It's from John chapter 20, the first 18 verses. It's in your bulletin if you want to follow along. early on Sunday morning. This would be the end of the Sabbath. When the sun rises on Sunday morning, Sabbath is over. So they can go back to their normal activities. The ladies know that Jesus has been put in that tomb. He was temporarily wrapped in cloth and spices, but there's more work to be done. So early on Sunday morning, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb and found that the stone had been rolled away from the entrance. She ran and found Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved, and she said, "They've taken the Lord's body out of the tomb, and we don't know where they've put him." Peter and the other disciple started out for the tomb. They were both running, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. Everything's a competition with these guys. It always was and always would be, right up until probably Pentecost when things finally clicked. He stooped in and looked in and he saw the linen wrappings laying there, and he didn't go in. Then Simon Peter arrived. He did go inside. He also noticed the linen wrappings lying there, while the cloth that had been covering Jesus' head was folded up and lying apart from the other wrappings. Then the disciple who had reached the tomb first also went in, and he saw and he believed. For until then, they hadn't understood the scriptures that said Jesus must rise from the dead. And then they went home. Mary was standing outside the tomb crying. And as she wept, she stooped and looked in. She saw two white-robed angels, one sitting at the head and the other at the foot of the place where the body of Jesus had been lying. "Dear woman, why are you crying?" the angels asked her. "Because they've taken away my Lord," she replied, "and I don't know where they have put him." She turned to leave and she saw someone standing there, and it was Jesus, but she didn't recognize him. "Dear woman, why are you crying?" Jesus asked her. "Who are you looking for?" She thought he was the gardener, and she said, "Sir, if you've taken him away, tell me where you've put him, and I will go and get him." And Jesus just said, "Mary." And she turned to him and she cried out, "Rabboni," which means teacher in Hebrew. "Don't cling to me," Jesus said, "for I haven't yet ascended to the Father. But go find my brothers and tell them I am ascending to my Father and to your Father, to my God and to your God." Mary Magdalene found the disciples and she told them, "I have seen the Lord," and she gave them his message. What a morning. Different expectations. They go expecting, or Mary goes expecting to find the stone and thinking, "How am I going to roll it out of the way? But I'll deal with that when I get there." When she gets there, the stone has already moved and she finds the tomb is empty. She runs and get the other apostles. They come running as well and they find this empty tomb. And John begins to put things together. Peter's beginning to put things together. Mary doesn't quite get it yet. And then finally, she's able to see Jesus. Everything that we believe hinges on these events in all four Gospels. Wednesday night, I mentioned just briefly Lee Strobel, the Christian apologist who gives a great case for, as a matter of fact, he wrote the book, The Case for Jesus. I mentioned him just briefly Wednesday night, but I want to talk a little bit more about his story and his conversion. Lee Strobel was an atheist. Devout atheist. He was a trained lawyer and he was a journalist. And he will, if you've ever heard him speak, he says, "You combine a lawyer and a journalist," he said, "imagine the kind of jerk you can get out of that," right? And he says that jokingly, but there's a ring of truth to it. He said, "I was a trained skeptic. We were trained to be skeptic about everything." He was the news editor and investigative journalist for the Chicago Tribune. And they prided themselves on being skeptical. They had a sign in their newsroom hanging up and said, they didn't do anything with just one source. It's back when journalism still had some credibility. They didn't do anything off of one source. They had to back everything up with multiple sources. We had a sign, he said, hanging in our newsroom that says, "If your mother tells you she loves you, get a second opinion. Get a second voice, back it up." That's how they felt about this. Lee Strobel was a devout atheist too, and his wife was agnostic, so she didn't really know if she believed or not. Well, they were married for several years, and Lee's wife was befriended by a Christian nurse and this Christian nurse began to teach her, and eventually Lee's wife became a Christian. And she comes home and she tells her atheist husband, "Guess what? I've decided to become a follower of Jesus." And Lee Strobel says the first word that went through his mind was divorce. He said, I didn't sign up for this. I didn't sign up for my wife to be some kind of holy roller joining a cult." Those were his words. He said, "I couldn't stand this." And he said, there were some things about her that changed that I found attractive, but overall I couldn't stand it. I wanted my old wife back. And I figured the best way to do it was just to discredit Christianity. If I could discredit Christianity to her and make her believe that it was, you know, and see that it was just a farce, that it was all a myth, then I could have my old wife back. So he said, I set out to discredit Christianity. I thought I could do it over a weekend. And being an investigative journalist, he didn't just use the Bible. He used the Bible, but he also used historic documents. It led him on an investigation that took almost 2 years. And in the time of that, he stockpiled and gathered stacks of documents. He went back and read Roman law, Greek law, Hebrew law. He went back and read historians outside the Bible. He said, "I just took the New Testament as another source. I did not see it as the inerrant God-inspired word that we talked about Wednesday night." He does now, but at that time he didn't. Everything that the Bible claimed, I had to back up with other sources. And he said, the more I found out, it was backed up by other sources. He will give four E's for the case that made him believe. Number one is E for execution. He said, it is very clear that Jesus was dead on the cross. You've heard stories that say, well, Jesus was probably just passed out, and when he was put in the coolness of the tomb overnight or over the weekend, his body revived and he found his way out, and that was, he wasn't really dead. Lee Strobel said, no, that's not the case. Every source that he could find verified that Jesus was dead. Everyone agrees. Even Jesus's critics, his enemies, agreed that he was dead. He said even the American Medical Association conducted an investigation several years ago. Looking at outside sources from the Bible, they concluded that Jesus was dead even before the spear went in his side and the blood and water came out. So there is no doubt, he said, in my mind, Jesus was dead on that cross. He was dead when they put him in the tomb. The second E that Strobel accounts for is the early accounts of his resurrection. He said, you know, over time, people have a way of building up legends, and they take decades for that to happen. But he said the case and the early accounts of Jesus' resurrection started almost immediately. Well, they did start immediately, but he said the historical references to them are shown almost immediately. Within a year, maybe two or three at the most, the apostles' creed was adopted that said Jesus was buried and resurrected. So early accounts confirm. The accounts didn't come later like they would if it was in a legend. It was something that was backed up by eyewitness accounts immediately after his death. The third E is the empty tomb. Now, we know from the accounts in the Bible, we also know from outside sources, and Strobel backed them up, that Jesus' body was put in that tomb. It was sealed with the king's seal, and it was put on, a Roman guard was put there, because the last thing that the religious leaders of the day wanted was for that tomb to be empty on the third day. So we know that the religious leaders made sure that it was not going to be taken, his body was not going to be taken by the apostles. The guards were placed there, the tomb was sealed. The apostles, they didn't have the means to pull that off. They didn't have the motive to pull it off. They didn't have the wherewithal to pull off that kind of a stunt. We know from all accounts that the body was in the tomb. Some people years later tried to say, well, it was just an empty tomb. No, it was not empty until that third day. The fourth E, and this is the one that really seals it for a lot of people, are the eyewitnesses. The disciples who were with Jesus that week, not just the 12, but those well beyond that group who had followed him and saw the crucifixion. They saw that he was dead. They saw him put in that tomb. Many of them saw him in risen form as well. If you go back and read 1 Corinthians 15:5, says that over 500 people over time, in that 40 days between the resurrection and his ascension, about 500 people saw him in bodily form, resurrected. Lee Strobel was able to go back and read historical accounts, again, from other sources outside the Bible, and document 515 people who saw Jesus in the flesh after the resurrection. And the 12 disciples that were remaining later, including Paul, which would come a little bit later, those apostles, they, until their very death, stuck to their story. That they saw Jesus alive, they saw him on the cross. Paul didn't see him on the cross, but he saw him on the road to Damascus. They saw him in resurrected form. That was convincing for him. They were all willing to go to their death sticking to that story. And they all did die sticking to that story. Only John died a natural death. From far as we can tell in history, all the others died martyrs sticking to their stories. Some of you have heard me talk about Chuck Colson from Watergate fame. Chuck was an agnostic as well, another attorney, and didn't believe, but he became a Christian later on in life, during and after the Watergate scandal. And the thing that was most convincing to him was this very fact, that the disciples, the apostles, stuck to their story unto the death. He said, when we broke into the Watergate Hotel, we couldn't keep a story straight for 2 weeks, much less for the rest of our lives. It all crumbled. He said, people cannot keep that kind of a secret and hold on to that kind of a conspiracy. That was the thing that sold him. Lee Strobel said it came down after a year and 9 months. He is sitting on a Sunday afternoon and he's got all of the evidence in front of him in his living room. And he said, I finally came to the point where I said, okay, you've got all the information here. You have to reach your verdict. And I said, as I looked at all of this information that I had accumulated over the last year and 9 months, I realized that it would take more faith for me to remain an atheist than it would for me to believe in the resurrection. He said, it was overwhelming, the evidence outside the Bible that confirmed that Jesus was who he said he was. And that's the thing, too. You can't say that Jesus was just some great teacher. If you think that, it doesn't fit. He was a lunatic and a liar if he wasn't the Son of God. And that's the conclusion that Strobel came to, and he became a Christian. Everything we believe hinges on this. Strobel thought, surely the easiest way to discredit Christianity was to take down the resurrection. If you take that down, then everything crumbles. And when he tried to disprove it, he proved himself to be a believer. Tom shared with me a story recently, Tom Hagen, of a couple that are friends of his. He is a preacher and had been for years, and they lose a daughter to cancer, I believe it was. And if you've lost a child, you know there is nothing more unnatural in this world than to bury a child. For a parent to bury a child is just not supposed to happen. It's not the order of life. Things aren't supposed to work that way. And if you want anything that summarizes the broken world, that right there is it in a nutshell. And as they had gone through the whirlwind events of her diagnosis and how quickly she passed, and they go through the funeral, and after the funeral, they're in the car and they're just totally wrecked. And if you've ever experienced that, you know, if you've seen people that have been through that, and I've watched my parents bury a child, I know what that's like. As they're in the car, she turns to her husband and she said, why do we even believe? Why do we believe if stuff like this happens? And it didn't take him long, and he said, honey, we believe because of the empty tomb. That's it. Everything hinges on the empty tomb. The empty tomb is death defeated. The empty tomb takes the sting out of death. Oh, it still stings for us, for those who are left behind. But for the one who dies, it's just like me walking from this room into that other room. I'm still here. I'm just in a different room. I'm still alive. You're going to live forever. You are immortal. It's just, where do you want your soul to be? We all believe because of that empty tomb. The evidence is in front of you, and we gather around a table and we celebrate this communion. It's the death and the burial of Jesus, yes, but more than anything, it is the resurrection of Jesus. It is Him on the right hand of God, lifted up after he was lifted up on that cross for us. If you believe, then you have that assurance that we all do, that he is coming back for us. As Charlie said, we kind of live between that Friday and Sunday. That's the world we live in. We're waiting for the return, for that new resurrection, if you will, and we will be lifted up in a different sense. But we're waiting. Until then, we just kind of have to sit in this broken world, but we know that the fix has been done. If there is any way that we can serve you this morning, if you would like to rededicate your life to Jesus, if you would like to have your first communion as a Christian and be baptized into his name, you can do that today as well. If there's any way we can help you, come while we stand and sing. God's in